Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of Indie Film Cafe. I'm your old pal, the Moo Cow, also known as Paul A. Presenza, and today I am here with...
Hi, I'm Lenore.
Yes, you are.
Sorry.
It's okay, and we are here to watch a movie called Crater Lake Monster from 1977. It was a very silly... bad stop animation dinosaur film. It's pretty darn ridiculous. Now, unfortunately, because of the coronavirus, it's just the two of us today and the monkey. But, you know, it may be the way that this is going to have to go for the time being. We'll have to see. Hopefully not. You know, as long as the two of us are here and we've got electricity, we might as well watch stinky movies because that's what it's all about, right?
All right.
Okay, so... we will come back and talk about this ridiculous film after we listen to some mood music. Okay, and we are back. So, Miss Lenore, what did you think of Crater Lake Monster?
A meteor crashes into Crater Lake.
We're up against something here that goes against every natural law.
The Crater Lake Monster lives and kills. The Crater Lake Monster, filmed in incredible new Fantomation. A Crown International Picture, rated PG.
It was not a good movie. I'm sorry, Mr. Director Person.
No?
No, it wasn't a good movie. I mean, I can tell a lot of effort went into it, but it's not good.
It's not good. Well, there you go. Well, okay, I know you love to be able to encapsulate movies, so I'm going to let you talk about the plot. What happens in Crater Lake Monster?
A meteor hits a lake, and I guess it's radioactive or something. Fake science happens, and it wakes up a plesiosaur, except they claim it actually grew from an egg in, 2 months?
Right.
Which seems unlikely. And then it eats people, and then it gets hit in the head with a bulldozer.
That's pretty much it, except for the incredibly awesome Mitch and Arnie show.
No, that was the worst part.
Well, talk a little bit about our buddies Mitch and Arnie.
They're drunk. I'm pretty sure they're actually alcoholics. They make their living off of cheating people by selling them renting out boats, except they massively overcharge people. And they change the price anytime they realize there's no other competition. Like, they go from $15 to $25, for example, for a boat that's actually worse than they claimed it was, because it had no motor.
That just makes them lovable scamps, doesn't it?
No, it makes them crooks. I mean, they're not as bad as the murderous alcoholic partway through.
Oh, yeah. Well, what about that guy?
I think he was only added to make Mitch and Arnie look better. Arnie in particular.
That's true.
Like, Mitch... actually came across as a better person. Arnie did not. Arnie was horrible.
You think so?
Yeah, Mitch was fairly honest in his practices. He admitted the boats weren't really ready. He didn't want to overcharge people. He wanted to help the people that were in trouble. I mean, he was actually concerned about people.
You know, I was thinking that these guys are kind of like Muppets. They're like Ernie and Bert, except stupider and not puppets.
That's true.
Okay, well, so let me give everybody a little bit of background on Crater Lake Monster. So, this was made in 1977, and it was written and directed by William Stromberg. He also pretty much financed it, at least in the early stages. And then Crown International Pictures came in, and they sort of took over, and... according to what I've read from some of the other folks who were involved in the film, they blame most of the screw-ups on Crown International Pictures coming in and changing things and ruining stuff. It's hard to tell. As far as William Stromberg goes, he was kind of a visual FX and camera operator in 1985 in a movie called Night Train to Terror, and that's really about it. And I remember when I first read or made a review of this film back in 1999, I did it for Internet Movie Database, and I wrote about how bad this was, and I actually got an email from Stromberg himself claiming that the movie was much better, or was supposed to have been much better. He was kind of angry that I took it to task as much, but pretty much he blamed Crown International Pictures. He was saying things like, you know, there was no post work done, and the editor was terrible, the music was terrible.
Oh, yeah, those are all very good points. The editor was terrible, the music was terrible. a lot of the shooting was done during the day and was claimed to be at night. It was very distracting and very funny.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, and he claims that the editor, and I think the quote was something along the lines of, you know, the guy didn't even do a single fade or transition shot the entire time.
That's also true. But definitely the funniest scene was when that one lady said, "I've never seen so many stars during the day."
Yeah.
With the sun overhead. Yeah. Very bright.
Clearly there was supposed to have been some post-production work, but they didn't do it, and so all the night shots were clearly broad daylight, and it just looked terrible.
Yeah, and also another thing is, the dinosaur in question is a plesiosaur, which means it's not supposed to be hunting in shallow waters, and it's definitely not supposed to be on land and moving around as well as it does.
True enough. Well, we will get to the plesiosaurs in a moment. So that's the director, William Stromberg. The actors include Richard Cardella, who is actually one of the co-writers of the film as well. He's the guy who plays Sheriff Steve Hansen. And as far as I can tell, this is the only film he's ever done. He was not a very good actor. Let's see. And then we have our two buddies, Arnie and Mitch. So Arnie was played by a guy named Glenn Roberts. And of course, he's the taller idiot with the beard. And he was also in a movie called The Evictors in 1979, but that's about it for him. And then Mitch, who was the smaller balding guy, he actually has been in a lot of stuff. He started off, believe it or not, as a clown for the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus.
Wait, when did he do that?
He did that when he was younger.
Okay, never mind. I was about to say he looked familiar.
Well, it's possible. But yeah, no, he did this. This would have been back in the 60s or early 70s.
Never mind then.
And by the way, the actor's name is Mark Siegel.
I've heard that name before.
He's been in a bunch of things. He's mainly known as a special effects artist. And he ended up doing stuff for Star Trek, Into Darkness. He's done Star Wars stuff.
Oh, that's where I've heard the name.
Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, which is a piece of crap. Pirates of the Caribbean, piece of crap. Galaxy Quest, Van Helsing. He was in a whole bunch of stuff. But this was pretty much his big acting role. I think just about his only acting role. The only other thing he was in as an actor, he was guy number two in an episode of Three's Company on TV. That's about it. Like I said, he started off as a clown, and then he ended up sculpting monster faces for the Universal Studios tour. Now, he actually works for George Lucas's Industrial Light and Magic. So, he's kind of gone a long way from being a clown to being a clown in this movie to actually a special effects guy. So, he probably doesn't talk much about this particular film. But, you know, at least he's gone on to do other things, unlike some of these other folks. And then, there is the Doctor, Doc Calkins. That is played by an actor by the name of Bob Hyman. He's another guy that didn't really do very much. The only thing I noticed on him is that he played a desk sergeant in the 1960 movie called Insight. And that's about it for him. Let's see. And then Dan was played by Richard Garrison. He was in a few things. He was in a movie in 1971 called Zodiac Killer. And then he was in he sort of guest starred in a couple of 80s TV shows, episodes. He was in Dallas. He was in The Colbys. He was in Hunter, and that's about it for him. And Susan Pattison, she plays the female archaeologist, quote unquote. She is played by Casey Cobb. She was in a 1985 TV series called Misfits of Science. And she was a technical advisor on a TV movie, A Bunny's Tale. That would be a Playboy Bunny's Tale, because she used to be a Playboy Bunny. And I don't think she was ever a centerfold or playmate of the month or whatever it was, but I do know that she was in the October 1973 edition of Playboy. And she also apparently played she was a stewardess on Playboy Jets. They used to have their own airline for a while.
They what?
Yeah, they had a little airline, and I think it used to go to like Atlantic City and Las Vegas. I think they had a casino at one point. They had all kinds of stuff there for a while, and she was one of the stewardesses. So I think she was the technical advisor for that show, because it's all about sort of the sordid background on bunnies and some of the dirty laundry that happens to some of them in there and all kinds of nonsense like that. So that's where she is part of. Let's see what else we have here. So the monster was designed with a guy named Phil Tippett, and he also went on to do a bunch of Star Wars stuff. And just a couple things about the actors. I almost forgot. Ross Conaway, the crappy magician, was played by Michael Hoover.
The magician?
Right. Remember the guy who drives the boat aground? He's in the white suit all the time.
He was a magician?
He was supposed to be a magician.
Oh.
And he apparently was another FX guy, and he ended up doing the visual effects for, Puppet Master 5 in 1984, and The Prophecy in 1995, which is actually a good movie, Octopus 2, The River of Fear, 2001, and a whole bunch of other things there. His wife, the one who talked about all the stars in the sky, even though you couldn't see any, the wife was named Pam, and the actress was called Suzanne Lewis, and this was her one and only starring role. So let's see here. The special effects, the stop motion dinosaur was run and created by Dave Allen. Now, Dave Allen, this was like one of his early movies. He's gone on to do a whole bunch of stuff. He did the FX in Laser Blast in 1978, The Howling, he helped out with that in 1981, Q in 1982, The Stuff in 1985, Robot Jocks in 1989, and a whole bunch of other things. So I think this was his first time for running the special effects by himself, or sort of like running the crew. And he was in a thing called When Dinosaurs Ruled the Earth, so I think that's probably why they got him involved in that. The cinematographer, and I think we've noticed that the cinematography had, you know, when it wasn't about the showing the lake, it was kind of crappy. But the cinematographer was by a guy named Paul Gentry. He also ended up becoming more of a special effects guy. I think he only did cinematography for a handful of films, but he ended up doing special effects for Bride of the Reanimator and Total Recall, Dark Man, and just a bunch of other things. So it's kind of a weird mixture, the cast, of these sort of amateurs and then people who ended up later going on into the special effects community and doing stuff behind in post-production. One of the interesting things about the film is the advertising. I think some of the posters showed a Tyrannosaurus Rex, but we did not get a Tyrannosaurus Rex, did we?
No, we didn't. We got a plesiosaur.
We got a lumpy plesiosaur, and it just looked bad.
Yeah.
I think they were trying to describe it as an alligator with flippers, but it doesn't look like that either.
No, it doesn't.
And, of course, the other thing is that if you think that this is shot at the famous Crater Lake in Oregon, you would be very much mistaken. This is not. This was actually shot in Huntington Lake in California.
Oh, I thought it was in Nevada. Okay.
Nope. And
wait, then why was there a map of Nevada in the background and not California?
Because the people in there were dumb, for the same reason why there was an ambulance sticker on there backwards.
Yeah.
Well, the lettering was totally backwards, and we're like, what the hell? And then the actual license plate was fine, everything else was fine, but they put the sticker on backwards.
Yeah.
So, continuity.
Yeah, that was a big one.
There was a bunch of continuity issues with this one. But yeah, it was Huntington Lake, California. And the other thing is that it wasn't crater-shaped. It was long and thin.
So this was kind of like a very dumb American version of the Lake Loch Ness Monster.
Very, very, very dumb, yes. What I've read is that originally the director, Stromberg, wanted to make an Abominable Snowman movie or a Yeti movie. So he wanted to do something in the Northeast, but he didn't want to do a movie with suits, guys in suits. He thought movies with guys in suits look stupid. So he thought...
Why was there a guy in a suit?
Well, there wasn't.
The magician guy.
Well, no. Guys in monster suits is what he meant.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he thought that would have been stupid. So instead of doing that, he decided stop motion was going to be the new thing. It's an old thing. Ray Harryhausen invented it, but... He thought it was going to come back, and of course it wasn't. It was all these guys ended up doing much, much bigger and better things with Star Wars and et cetera. But, stop motion, you can still kind of do it. I remember in the early 80s, we still had some stuff. We still had, the Seventh Voyage of Sinbad and a few other somewhat decent movies that had stop motion. But for the most part, that kind of special effects was done. But for whatever reason, he thought that he was going to be able to do it here. And the stop motion was okay as far as the effects go, if you just in isolation. But, it didn't look right with the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Like every time you saw the dinosaur, you knew it wasn't really there because all the proportions were wrong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they kept saying this thing was 60 feet long and it's visibly... smaller than the bulldozer they were working with.
Right, and it didn't match up with any shadows. It didn't cast any shadows. The motion didn't leave any ripples in the water. It was slow as hell, and it just looked ridiculous.
Yeah. Also, they never address how an aquatic dinosaur is moving around on land.
Very, very slowly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they had a lot of issues with this. And again, I think part of it is because Crown International Pictures decided, once they started taking over the financing, they wanted to push other aspects and other things that either these guys weren't prepared to do or had not any experience with or didn't know what to do. So, I think that's one of the reasons why they kept talking about how they were the ones who ended up causing a lot of the problems. You can definitely see that there were problems in this film, and it definitely had a feel like it was incomplete, don't you think?
Yeah, it's like the whole plot is rushed.
Absolutely.
I think we're at more than the halfway point, even 3/4 of the way through before anyone even knows the monster's there.
Oh yeah, they think something's there, but in between some of the plotless, the totally worthless and useless subplots, they finally figure out that there's a monster there. So let's get on to the writing, because that's one of the biggest issues here, and they have no blame on Crown International Pictures for this. This is just the writers themselves.
Very stilted, awkward dialogue.
Very bad dialogue, but all of these pointless little subplots. I mean, the whole thing with the guy who steals the liquor.
No reason to be there.
Why do we need to even do that? It was so ridiculous. This guy is like, I guess he's supposed to be some kind of hillbilly, and he's out of his liquor, so he goes to the nearest liquor store and pulls out this bottle of whatever, slaps it on the table, and the guy's like, okay, $4.75. And then he shoots the guy, and then he shoots a woman. It's $4.75. Just give the guy some money. You're going to kill two people rather than spend a little bit of money for some booze?
Yeah, and then he drives his car off a cliff.
Yeah, so then he gets, the cop figures out he's the guy. And there's a quote-unquote chase. He drives off the road into the woods, drives his car off a cliff because, fortunately there's a cliff there.
Crawls out from the car and up the mountain and then runs out into the road right in front of the cop. And all I can think of is if he had just hid behind a bush near the bottom, he would have gotten away with it.
Yeah, because it's already been demonstrated that the sheriff, like everybody else, is dumb as a brick.
Yeah. So not only is he a murderous criminal, he's a stupid murderous criminal.
Because pretty much everybody else in this film is stupid. You can put that, tagline under just about everybody. But anyway, so he runs out just enough in time for the sheriff to see that he's there. And then another merry chase ensues. They start shooting at each other. The cop shoots the guy in the leg. He drags himself to the lake and then silently gets eaten by the plesiosaur.
Yeah, completely silently. The guy is like 50 meters away and doesn't hear anything.
Doesn't say anything. No roars, no nothing.
I mean, the cop is 50 meters away and has no idea what happened.
Oh, yeah. And of course, this is not the first time. Remember, the very first time, the guy who rents the boat from our two jackass idiots, it turns out he's a senator.
What?
Yeah, he's some kind of senator, they say later on.
What?
Yeah, it's hard to believe, but yeah, he's supposed to be some kind of senator.
The fact that his severed head was found in this town doesn't raise more concerns?
Of course not. Well, before we get to the severed head, so what happens is that this idiot senator goes to idiot Mitch and idiot Arnie and rents the boat. And he cries because they're charging him $20. And he goes out in what's supposed to be the night, but of course it's day. And he floats off and here comes the plesiosaur. Now, you would think the guy might scream or make a noise or something, but nothing. He barely reacts at all. And the monster doesn't even scream or do anything. It's like the quietest death ever.
Yeah, that's another thing. All of the deaths are silent.
Yeah, because, God, you wouldn't want to scare anybody in a horror movie, would you?
Come to think of it, I'm not sure the gunshots made any noise.
Oh, they were probably edited in later on. But so the reason that they know that the guy is dead is because the boat ends up floating back and it's full of blood. Which is odd, considering that we all saw the senator fall out of the boat into the water, and that's where the stupid claymation dinosaur ate him. He wasn't in the boat, so how did all the blood get in the boat?
That's true.
Yet another continuity error.
And another one is they're very unclear about the timeline between the meteor and all of this happening.
Oh, really? Explain.
Well, they say it's 6 months in one scene and 2 months in another.
Continuity!
Yeah. Also, I'm not an expert on plesiosaurs, but I'm pretty sure they don't get that big in either 6 or 2 months.
Well, you bring up an interesting point. Let's talk a little bit about the science. Especially with our buddy science doctor, who's a little doctor of pretty much everything.
Yeah, they never specify what the guy is a doctor in. They kind of imply that he's a medical doctor, but he knows a lot about dinosaurs and radiation and meteorology and
archaeology
and astrophysics. It's very unclear. I should probably specify he's not good at any of those fields.
No, but at least he can sort of bullshit his way through it, I suppose.
Yeah.
So what about from a science perspective? How realistic was all this?
Very unrealistic.
Okay. How so?
Now, a meteor hitting a lake like that isn't particularly unrealistic. Meteors hit Earth all the time. In fact, I have a meteor in my bedroom. But meteors are pretty much all metal. They don't look the way they're claiming it does. And they can be radioactive, but this one probably wasn't. It really wouldn't take that long to cool down.
Oh yeah, they were saying it was going to take 6 months.
It wouldn't take 6 months to cool down. Like, you could probably reasonably expect for it to cool down within a day or two.
Sure. It's just rock, right?
Mostly it's metal.
There you go. Even so, it's in a lake full of cold water.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Other things to consider is there's no way an egg that's frozen like that, like they're claiming it is, would actually be able to hold life, fertile or not.
Yeah, their explanation for this is that the dinosaur hatched itself fully grown, by the way, from this egg, and it must have been a gigundous egg, and the meteor that falls at the beginning of the film lands in the lake and warms up the water just enough to turn it into an incubator and therefore hatch the prehistoric egg.
The heat would have dissipated long before then. But also, it's
ridiculous.
How would an egg survive that long without parents in the lake? And for that matter, it's a small lake. It is a small, shallow lake. I'm not a good swimmer, and I'm confident I could swim across that lake.
Well, as far as the egg goes, I mean, it's an anaerobic environment, so in theory, you can have organic material last for some time. I don't know that I've ever heard of, you know, that kind of organic material lasting millions and millions of years, which is what they're claiming for this plesiosaur. And by the way, aren't we talking about something that would have been born or would have been laid in a saltwater environment? And now, since the land has risen up over time, it's now a freshwater lake. Doesn't that matter?
It looks like it's a lake carved by a retreating glacier, so it's definitely freshwater.
Well, yeah, definitely not made out of a crater from a meteor.
Yeah.
And it's funny because in the beginning, the archaeologists are in there and they're claiming that the cave paintings, quote unquote, they find is these people with some trees and a falling star and the plesiosaur. So the guy's trying to say that this is scientific evidence that dinosaurs lived with humans.
Well, I'll be damned. Cave drawings. How old do you figure they are?
We think they're at least several thousand years old.
No kidding. Couldn't this have waited until morning? Uh-huh.
But that's not all. Look at this.
I don't get it. All I see are men fighting with some large animal. Dinosaur.
Exactly right.
But dinosaurs were extinct before man ever appeared.
That's what we've always thought. But this is proof positive that at least some survived all the way into the age of man.
Yeah, they make no attempt to date anything on the painting or right. Identify the ink or anything.
No, they're just automatically assuming this is completely correct.
Yeah. It's just a dumb movie all around.
Well, clearly somebody didn't bother to do their research on pretty much anything, which is pretty typical when it comes to these indie films. I mean, you know, you're just trying to make a monster movie to scare the kids in the drive-ins, I suppose. But, you know, you could make a little bit more effort to make something at least seem realistic.
Yeah, it was bad.
So all of these things that we're talking about, you might think are the worst sins of the film, but it's really not. The worst sin of this particular film, at least in my opinion, is the fact that about 75% of the film is watching the two idiots, Arnie and Mitch, talking to each other or arguing with each other or throwing water at each other or just being stupid and drunk the entire time.
Yeah, they really aren't good people. I don't know why they were made the protagonists.
I mean, if they're supposed to be the comic relief, the way you use comic relief to sort of release tension is you sort of bring them in little bits here and there after, you know, your main people, your protagonists are doing stuff and drama has increased. Well, there's no drama, first of all. And secondly, they're in most of the scenes. What the hell? This is supposed to be a freaking horror movie, a monster movie. There's supposed to be some fear generated. Instead, it's these bumbling idiots that I guess we're supposed to think is funny, and worse, we're watching them the entire time. Everything is about them. It's ridiculous. And I remember, what is the first thing you said when I started talking?
When they started talking about the boats and whether or not to overcharge this guy, all I could think of is, I hate them already.
And then all we see of them is more and more and more and more. It's all Mitch and Arnie.
Yeah, I mean, the movie, after people are literally dying, and we've just watched a guy murder people, the main concern of the movie is how badly the dinosaur is going to affect their business. And it's not a well-run business.
No, no, no. But the problem is we shouldn't even be dealing with Mitch and Arnie to begin with. You know, I mean, what happened to the archaeologists? They were like in the very first part of the movie. We never see them again till the end.
That's also true. Come to think of it, if they really were claiming it was anywhere between 6 and 2 months, why are they still there?
I don't know. Because the plot demands it, and I guess they need somebody there besides Mitch and Arnie. God knows why. They carry the movie so much. They are supposed to be the comic relief. Now, did you find them to be funny?
No.
Really? Well, what did you find them to be?
Annoying.
They were
annoying, why? Dishonest drunkards.
So you're saying that you shouldn't focus your horror movie on characters who are annoying, dishonest drunkards?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you want them to be the comic relief, you probably shouldn't make them, well, drunk all the time. You probably shouldn't make them fight all the time amongst themselves, and you really probably shouldn't be showing them swindling people.
Although the one does kind of give up his life, sort of, for the community later.
He didn't need to be there.
No, he didn't, but I guess
he contributed nothing to the solution.
I guess they wanted him to sort of be heroic.
He wasn't. He was just an idiot. He had no business being there. He couldn't fire off... He can't fire a gun, to begin with. He didn't need to be there at all. He actively slowed it down. More than once.
So basically what happens is the big climax of the film, it's so ridiculous. These people have gotten together into the town, I guess at that stupid restaurant they all go to where the tablecloth matches the drapes. And they are all talking about what they should do. And of course, half the people want to kill the monster. The other half are thinking about what kind of money they can make off of it and yada yada.
Boss, please. Please, listen to me for a minute. Now, I know what you've heard so far today is rather difficult to believe. I wouldn't believe it myself if I hadn't seen it with my own eyes. But Doc and Dan have got a plan to try and trap this thing.
Trap it? You're going to let this thing set up housekeeping and the like? I say kill it. Get rid of it right now. That's what we should do now, you hear?
Meanwhile, the monster is bored as hell and crawls out of the lake and wanders up and ends up killing, or at least trying to kill, a mechanic guy that we saw earlier. And he runs into the breakfast place and shows everyone that he's been attacked, and they all go running out. And Sheriff gets into one of those, snow cat. It's a little mobile instead of wheels. It's got tracks in it, and it's got a little bitty sled attachment in the front. It's not a bulldozer by any stretch of the imagination. It's just sort of a little tiny mini-looking bulldozer. And then Mitch decides he's going to go out there and play the hero, and he jumps on the back of it, and they both go out to confront the very slow-moving, ponderous, and bumpy, goofy-looking dinosaur.
And it goes down with just a whack to the head with the bulldozer attachment. Like, Mitch contributes nothing here.
Oh, no. Mitch just gets scared and jumps off, and then the dinosaur just bites him, and that's it. Yeah, so the sheriff just kind of mildly bumps it once, and then you see a close-up, and it's like there's blood, but, you know, I don't see how. First of all, the damn blade can't even get up so high. The neck and the head are way up above it, and you don't see it, but it definitely implies that he's been running the damn thing into it, but it's not believable at all. And then the thing just kind of goes
and falls
and just gives up.
Yeah, and then they cut away, and they leave Mitch's body there, I should add.
Yes,
they don't do anything like call a hearse or ambulance or bury him. They just leave his body.
They just leave his stupid drunk ass there
next to the dinosaur, who looks like a pile of sand that they just spray painted green.
Yeah, well, it was definitely an image of the dinosaur, but you could tell it wasn't matched up with the rest of the film, and it's just moving left and right, and it was very unconvincing. And the last thing is you see poor Mitch, and he's upset about his friend's death. He's like, "Damn you, Arnie!" And then that's the end. So, Crater Lake Monster. How about the magician and his wife?
I feel bad for them, because they're clearly nice people who wanted to have a nice evening. But,
Even though it was during the day.
That's true, yeah. So, it starts with them going on the boat ride, and they actually managed to survive the boat ride and the dinosaur, so good on them.
It's funny, because remember, they go to rent the boat from our two lovable buddies, Mitch and Arnie, who have been unable to start the boat by themselves. They're supposed to be going to some stupid hoedown, quote unquote, and Mitch can't get the boat to work, so they're gonna go off in a huff when all of a sudden here comes the magician and his wife, because their car is broken down and they need somewhere to hang out while they're waiting for the repair. And they go up to them and say, "Hey, we'd like to rent the boat for the evening," even though, again, it's broad daylight. And they figure, oh, sure, here's a way to make money, $25. But they know that the boat doesn't work. They just let them go. But, of course, As soon as they get the boat, the magician, who's actually competent, is able to start the boat almost immediately, and they go off to the lake.
Yeah, which means I still have some questions about this, because why would you wear... Oh, but he's wearing a suit, and you can see the rental tag on it.
Oh, yeah, his white jumpsuit.
But he's wearing a white suit for a boat ride in the middle of the lake. It doesn't seem like a good idea.
True enough.
But you actually can see a rental tag on it up close.
But yeah, but they actually survived the critter, right?
Yeah, they do. They survived the dinosaur, and they managed to get to shore, and I guess they're in shock. But they managed to basically kill any enthusiasm I had for them surviving, because the guy immediately drinks gasoline.
Well, he's supposed to try to light a fire. I guess his idea is that fire is going to drive the monster away. So once the boat is aground and the monster's just kind of standing there or just waiting for them to do something, he's just kind of going rah. So the magician runs up to the boat, and there's a little thing of gasoline, and he pulls the top off, and for whatever reason he puts his mouth on it like he's going to drink it. It's so gross. I don't know if he's testing it to see if it's gas or water, but you've got a nose.
Yeah, gasoline has a strong smell.
Yeah, if you can smell gasoline, it's probably gasoline.
But yeah, it honestly looks like he drinks some of it before deciding to light the boat on fire, and I don't know why.
Yeah, it's so gross, but that's what he ends up doing. He figures out that it's actually gasoline, and he throws it onto the boat, and then he lights a match. And meanwhile, the monster's perfectly content to allow him to do all of this. It's just kind of sitting there. It gets it on fire. And then the dinosaur is kind of like, well, I don't like fire, I guess, so I think I'll slowly go back around. And so it just leaves after a few minutes, and the other two just kind of sit there, and they sit there all night, apparently.
Oh, and also the guy has a head injury during all of this and blacks out, and for some reason the wife doesn't try and go get help.
No, well, you know, they're both quote-unquote in shock, so they're all just kind of sitting there until idiots Mitch and Arnie show up, and because of course they do, because they're everywhere. And it was really funny because Arnie is you know, says, here, bring that jug over here, and there's no jug, it's just a bottle of booze.
I thought that was Mitch.
It could very well have been.
Yeah, Mitch is the one who wanted to get the medical help, and Arnie was the one screaming about money.
Well, yeah, but I think initially he had the booze, because at the time I thought Mitch was giving his coat to the girl.
Yeah, Mitch was giving the coat to the girl, yeah.
So, yeah, so he keeps talking about the jug. Well, he ended up seeing a jug later on, but initially, every time he's talking about a jug, it's actually a bottle of booze. It's just ridiculous. Just yet another, you know, continuity issue. Ah, where'd the monkey go? Monkey!
There he is.
Oops.
Found him.
There we go. So, yeah. Yet another continuity issue with this film, among many. So, yeah, I just don't understand why Mitch and Arnie have to be the focus of the film. I mean, I understand why you don't want to put the monster as much in there, because it's just expensive and you have to pay for it, but couldn't you find something else? I mean,
like the magician and his wife.
Sure, or someone else. You've got the sheriff and the doctor.
You have the archaeologists.
That just show up for a little while and then they're gone.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But instead, it's the Mitch and Arnie show. And it's funny because every time you see these hayseeds, there's always some stupid, ridiculous music being played. And the music in general is awful. And that's definitely one of the pieces that Crown International Pictures definitely got wrong. And I can understand their complaint about that, because the music was just simpering and awful.
Yeah, I think it was banjo music.
That was part of it. And then, like, sometimes you would hear what I call the cat on the piano. Dun 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 dun. Thank you.
That's probably true. Although I think a cat on a piano would sound worse.
Probably, but it was pretty bad. And then there were just other times it was just clearly not correct. It's like not right for the scene. It would be like this weird, awful, lighthearted music when...
on a horrible, horrible scene of somebody
right,
getting murdered.
When some, you know, they've just discovered somebody's been killed or eaten.
Oh, yeah. Like, there's happy, lighthearted music over the shot of the guy's severed head.
As you should be, right? Yeah, that ridiculous styrofoam floating head.
Yeah, it was not a convincing head.
And it showed, like, all this weird decay to it, and it shouldn't.
Because it was less than a day.
Right, right, right. So, it was, just yet another continuity issue. Yeah, the monkey is all squeaked out, I'm afraid, guys, because this movie was just full of continuity issues, among other things. So, as far as monster movie, I mean, we talked about how you kind of like dinosaur films, right?
Yeah, I like dinosaurs in general.
All right, well, as a dinosaur movie, how does this go?
Technically, there is a dinosaur.
Of a sort, yes.
It's not a well-thought-out movie.
So, how familiar are you with plesiosaurs?
When I was 5, they were my favorite dinosaur.
Really? So, did this critter at least seem like a plesiosaur?
No. The proportions were wrong.
Okay. Well, what about the teeth? It seemed like it had a lot of teeth.
I think that was fairly accurate.
Okay, because I thought plesiosaurs were pretty much plant eaters.
Is it okay if I look that up?
Sure, look it up. But I always thought they were plant eaters, and I guess if you are a plant eater, you don't really need... I mean, I guess you need your back teeth. You need your molars to sort of grind. But it had pretty sharp canines, I thought. And usually that's typical of predators. And, I mean, I guess if it's eating fish, too, it would probably need something like that. But remember, fortunately, there were a bunch of drawings that somebody had made. And that's how the sheriff was able to identify it. And he's like, yeah, this is the thing that chased me. And he kept saying it was an alligator with flippers, but that's nothing. Looks nothing like an alligator. Nothing at all.
So, plesiosaur and plesiosaurus. Sorry, plesiosaurus and plesiosaurus. Plesiosauruses are different animals.
Okay, please explain.
Plesiosaurus is about 15 feet long and 1,000 pounds.
Well, it was bigger than that.
Yeah, which would have meant that this would have been about a plesiosaur.
What's that?
Plesiosaurs. They were not unclear, actually, about whether it was a plesiosaurus or a plesiosaur. But
I guess whatever one's 60 foot long.
Neither of them are.
Oh?
The longest they come in is 30 feet.
Okay, well, definitely bigger than that.
Yeah.
Kept saying it was big as a house.
It wasn't. It was about the size of the bulldozer.
Yeah, that's true. So, but what about the teeth?
Yeah, I'd say they have teeth. It looks kind of like a whale's teeth, except pointed outward instead of down.
Well, are they predators?
Yes.
Okay. So, on the whole, did you think that they did a pretty good job with the dinosaur, at least for what you're seeing, aside from the size? I mean, bearing in mind this is mostly speculation, since all we really have to know about these plesiosaurs are fossils.
I guess so. They got the color wrong, too, but...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He was kind of brown and lumpy in this film.
Yeah. But they're aquatics. They're going to look more like aquatic animals, so bluish, brownish.
And, you know, the other thing, too, remember the sheriff ran into tracks, and there were, like, these three-toed tracks? Where the heck was that coming from?
That's true. This thing has flippers. How did they get footprints?
Yeah, because remember the sheriff was taking pictures of it and showing it to the archaeologists? Now, what the archaeologists have anything to do with dinosaurs is beyond me. But that's another thing, is they don't seem to understand what archaeologists are. They kept saying things like, oh, meteors, archaeologists love meteors, paleontologists love meteors. And it's like, well, wait a second. You're getting all your sciences confused here, pal. Again, nobody did any background in any of this stuff. Archaeologists don't really have anything to do with dinosaurs or meteors.
That's true, yeah.
And even the general doctor didn't seem to understand that either. But, it was just the total lack of preparation. I understand the guy wants to make a monster movie, but if you're going to sort of try and ground it in reality, because there were real dinosaurs, even a far-fetched idea of dinosaurs surviving into modern times, at least go to the effort to try and make it based on a real dinosaur and get the up to the latest information about them correct, and B, get the actual scientists who study these things correct, you know?
Yeah. Okay, so I looked up the Wikipedia article.
On which?
The general class of plesiosaurs come in two forms. Plesiosauridia, which are long-necked, and Pleosauridia, which are short-necked.
Well, I think this is definitely a long-necked one.
So that would mean Plesiosauridia, which they were long-necked with small heads, very slow-moving, and caught small sea animals.
Okay. So then they were predators.
Yes.
So then having teeth probably makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so at least they got that part of it correct.
Yeah.
They probably had back in the 70s, they used to have these little plastic colored dinosaurs, and they probably had a plesiosaur from that, and that's what they based it on, because I had that. Every kid that grew up in the 70s had that, because dinosaurs were like, super cool, man.
They are cool.
Oh, yeah. And then the other thing is that there's definitely an element of Jaws going on in here, too, because, again, this is 1977, and, you know, the two big movies would have been Jaws in 75 or 76, and then Star Wars, which would have been 77. So right in between the two, I guess they tried to make this film, and there's definitely a little bit of Jaws in there with the people dying in the water, and there's at least one shot of like a swimmer in the water where the dinosaur is supposed to, we're like, you know, seeing it through its eyes as it's about to eat its victim. And that's kind of when you notice that the head, the dinosaur head, is definitely like a piece of styrofoam or a piece of plastic that somebody is pushing from behind.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, anytime you get any kind of a close-up on the dinosaur, it's clearly not moving. It's clearly, you know, static, and somebody is pushing it around. It's a piece of plastic. You know, the stop motion stuff wasn't really that bad, I thought, even though it was incongruous with the rest of the film. But the actual dinosaur head that they used was bad. It looked bad. It floated wrong. It was shaped wrong. Its reaction in the water was wrong. And the fact that somebody had to actually move it, it was pretty obvious. It just looked bad.
Yeah. There's no science in this movie.
No science at all.
They get the plesiosaur kind of correct, except for its size.
Right, they actually made it too big, didn't they?
They claim it's too big, but the actual model in the movie doesn't look that big.
Well, I think, if I remember reading correctly, the actual model that they made for this, that they did, they animated, was like 4 foot long. Or, you know, 4 foot long and, I don't know, I guess a couple of feet tall. And they had to have that, and they would have had to have had a life-size working model. Now, it was too much money to afford to make a life-size working model, so I guess that's why they only went with the head. And they had the one head that got pushed in the water that never did anything. And then it looked like they had another one that they made that was slightly larger that the jaws opened up. And then somebody would just sort of make the jaws move. And it was supposed to look like it was actually killing somebody when it was clearly not. And, yeah, so. But like I said, I thought the stop motion part wasn't too bad, the claymation part. If the rest of the film had had some more money, I suppose it could have worked. I know that Crown International made them get rid of a lot of the early work that they shot and made them reshoot a bunch of stuff. And we will never know what any of that early stuff looked like. I know one of the actors, I think it was Richard Cartella, he was saying that the Crown International had ended up screwing up so much of the film and that they had done all this other work and they just made them get rid of it. And it just, you know, it's one of those things that happens is when you get a new financier to come in and take over the picture, they're the ones paying the bills, so they end up calling the shots. And because of their interference, they ended up turning what could have been an interesting, modest little movie into something that the director and rest of the cast and crew simply couldn't pull off. So I kind of feel bad for them. You know, I think they just tried to sort of make their own film, and circumstances being what they were, they were not able to pull off more. You know, they ended up taking a bigger bite than they could chew, so to speak.
Yeah, I think so. But what's funny is I do remember when I was younger hearing about this cryptid that lived in local rivers and lakes and stuff.
Really?
And it was basically described as being like a really small plesiosaur, like 4 feet long.
Like, where are we talking?
I think it was in Arizona or something.
Oh, I thought you meant where you were living.
Oh, no. No, I heard about it being in Arizona somewhere.
Arizona?
Yeah. I did a report on Arizona when I was in school and still obsessed with dinosaurs.
Oh, and so you heard about an Arizona cryptid.
But I don't remember the name of it. I'm not even sure if it's actually a thing or not, or if I just made it up or misattributed it or anything like that.
But it was a dinosaurish kind of critter?
It looked a lot like plesiosaur, except it was small. Like, really small. Like, was slightly bigger than dog.
So like a manatee? Like this guy?
Like 4 feet long.
Oh, well, I guess manatees are bigger than that.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, you never know. I'll have to do a little research and see about these dinosaur-like cryptids in Arizona. I'd never heard of that before. Huh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, were you able to find out any information about two idiots named Mitch and Arnie?
No.
I guess not.
Wait, found it.
Oh.
Okay. It's longer than I thought it was, but it's called...
That's what she said.
Tahoe Tessie.
Tahoe Tessie. Do tell.
Okay. So apparently it's a creature said to live in Lake Tahoe.
Well, that's not Arizona.
That's true. California, Nevada. And apparently it can be traced back to members of Washoe and Paiute?
Oh, the Paiute?
Yeah.
Indians?
Lives in an underwater tunnel beneath cave rock. Somewhere between 4 and 80 feet. Well, that's remarkably inconsistent.
Between 4 and 80 feet?
Yeah. Having a serpentine body and a coloration ranging from black to turquoise.
So basically nobody's gotten a good look at this thing.
No. That or there's more than one.
That's the, how they explain it. That's the thing about cryptoids is that, you know, you can never get a good look at them. There's never any photographic evidence. There's never anything other than tall tales.
Yeah.
So you think that our plesiosaur in Crater Lake could have been this guy?
I mean, obviously the plesiosaur in Crater Lake was not that convincing.
No, yeah, he was definitely just a lump of clay.
You
chuckled. As soon as the critter came out, you started chuckling.
Yes, I did. It was very silly looking.
Yeah, poor thing. Oh, dear. I don't know, I kind of felt bad for the poor critter.
Yeah.
You know, their plan was to, you know, if they weren't going to kill it, they were going to sort of herd it to like a shallow pool in one of the, in part of the lake. And then they were going to dynamite the opening and then keep it in there. And then I guess they were going to show it off to people and charge people $1 to take a look at it. And I don't know. It just seemed an awful way to treat this animal. I mean, it's, you know, whether it's a monster, quote unquote, or a dinosaur, it's still a live animal. I mean, it's not like it's evil running around killing things. It's only eating to feed itself. You know, I don't know. Again, this is one of those Jaws thing, only instead of being a shark, it's a ridiculous, lumpy clay plesiosaur. But I just kind of felt bad for the critter. I mean, it didn't do anything that any other hungry animal would do, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why I really didn't really feel too sorry for when the folks started getting et.
Yeah, it's hard to care about anyone in this movie.
There's another big point, is the characters are all loathsome and awful and stupid. So why would you care one whit for any of them? I was kind of hoping they'd all get eaten. I was actually rooting for the Crater Lake monster.
Yeah, I kind of was too.
Unfortunately, our Crater Lake monster gets bumped mildly by a semi-bulldozer and then faints and then just dies for lack of interest. And thus ends yet another horrible horror movie. Well, I guess we've talked enough about Crater Lake Monster. Now we need to talk about ranking it. Just for those of you who've been paying attention to our show and for the benefit of those who have not, we use a rating system here at Indie Film Cafe by which we rate the film on a 1 to 10 scale, where 1 is not very much stink at all, and 5 is kind of in between, mediocre, and 10 is a whole big ball of stink. Just awful, terrible, and ridiculously horrific amount of stink. And so 1 to 10, and if you feel kind of subtle, you can give a half step, say a 5.5 or 6.5 or 2.5 or something like that, depending on how you feel. So, Ms. Lenore, you've seen quite a few movies here at Indie Film Cafe at this point, and you've ranked a whole bunch of movies, each one stinkier than the last. What number would you give this in relation to other films that you have seen?
7.5.
7.5, okay. So tell me why you gave it that score.
I don't think it was as bad as some of the ones you've shown me.
Okay.
So anything above 8 feels too harsh, but it's not a good movie.
Well, fair enough. Fair enough, because I was probably going to give this movie an 8. I figured that was as bad as it could be. There were parts of the film that weren't too bad, you know, if you can believe that. It's some of the acting wasn't too bad. Some of the cinematography, like the shots of the lake, were pretty. Some of the claymation was kind of good. It had bits and pieces that were actually decent. There were a couple of really good shots that looked nice. I remember when the very first guy gets killed. Remember the very first fisherman, the guy that just kind of looks around a couple of times, and you don't see him get killed. He kind of yells off screen, but what you're seeing is you're seeing a shot of the lake and the beach at sunset, and it's actually the real sunset and not daylight trying to pass off as sunset. And the water is a nice dark blue, and then the sunset is this really beautiful reddish, yellow, golden color. And it looked really nice. And I kept thinking when I saw it, I was like, wow, that's a really great shot. I wish the rest of the movie had been as good as that. And of course it wasn't. And then the lake itself was kind of the best thing in the film. Don't you think so?
Oh, yeah. Yes, it definitely was. The lake was pretty.
Oh, yeah. So there were some nice aspects to the film. The lake was nice, and there were some decent aspects to it, but not nearly enough to rescue it. It was still pretty badly acted, badly shot, poorly edited, and especially in the post-production. The post-production sank it. The day-for-night shooting was just horrific. I mean, it's whatever suspense you were trying to build was ruined by the lack of post-production and day-for-night shooting. It's as bad as anything Ed Wood had ever done, except it was worse because it was in color. And you could see these just wretchedly harsh shadows from what's clearly an overhead sun being passed off as daylight. And I don't know how many times people were talking about it being late at night, or they were going out in the evening, or it was tonight we're doing this, or look at all the stars, or something in the moonlight, and it is clearly, obviously, no doubt about it, broad daylight. And that really, really sinks any credibility that the movie had. So, you know, I can't blame that on the actors. I can't blame that on the director. I can't blame it on the writers. I blame that squarely on Crown International Pictures, who, you know, sank money into it and then decided not to do much with it after in post-production. They really did not follow up at all. And they kind of left the movie out to dry, which is kind of a shame, because I think if they had at least done that much, if it ended up looking better than it did, it probably wouldn't have gotten such a bad rating and wouldn't have been, you know, made fun of quite as much. Okay, the plesiosaurus is still, you know, the lumpy clay critter is still kind of ridiculous, and the Arnie and Mitch show is still ridiculous and stupid. But at least it would have looked much better, and I think people would have liked it a bit better. But unfortunately, that's not what happened with Crown International, and they really dropped the ball, and I kind of feel bad for them. So 8 is as much as I'm willing to give them. So you say a 7.5?
Yeah, I'd say around there.
That's probably fair. So at some point, we're going to have to get Moody or somebody else to take a peek at this, because we are going to need a third score for our stinkometer. And of course, because of the coronavirus, that's, you know, the thing that's going out there, we're really unable to run around and get more people. So we're going to have to score things as best we can, and maybe come back and add some scores later, which is what we did the previous year when we only had 2 hosts giving out scores. So we'll try and do that as best we can. But, you know, as long as we are still alive and have electricity and have movies and time, we're going to continue with Indie Film Cafe and keep on bringing you stinky movies, because we know that's what you love, because it's, of course, it's what we love. All right, then. I think that wraps it up for this episode of Indie Film Cafe. I hope you guys all had a good time. I know Continuity Monkey did. What about you, Miss Lenore?
Yeah, I think I did too.
Outstanding. Well, we will see you next time. And we will see you on the flip side. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. But wait, there is more. Yes, we were able to reach all the way out to the West Coast and get Mr. Moody to watch Crater Lake Monster and give us his thoughts. So we are actually going to let you know what he has to say right here.
Hey, everybody. It's your buddy Jonathan Moody here as a special guest for Indie Film Cafe's episode of The Crater Lake Monster, a.k.a. the Poopasaurus Monster of Crater Lake. This is what I wanted to call it. I'm here to give basically my quick, like, little thoughts, and then I'm going to give my little review and rating for the stinkometer. So, first of all, I thought the movie was really fun. It was an enjoyable movie. Especially on a rainy Sunday afternoon. I really enjoyed watching it here in LA. Sorry I could not be there, because I have this feeling it was a fun time for Paul and Lenore, especially with all the science and stuff that they did, you know. So I really enjoyed a lot of that. I just enjoyed the characters, especially Arnie and Mitch, I think were their names. They were the kind of goofball characters who ended up, well, Arnie, poor Arnie. I felt bad for him the most. But I was expecting them to get eaten earlier than they did, or at least one of them did. So anyway, my thoughts on it as a whole was, it wasn't a terrible movie. Like, this was not a Neil Breen movie or anything like that. But it was not the best movie of all time, kind of thing. So I'm on the stinkometer. Everybody else has probably already given their little number. So I'm going to go with 7, not knowing what either Paul nor Lenore picked. I'm going to go with 7. And guess we'll just have to see what they gave as well. So. Thank you guys for listening to me do this little, you know, silliness, and be able to be a part of Indie Film Cafe, even from the distance. Obviously, I'll be doing another one next month in quarantine. So anyway, hope you guys are all staying safe and being joyous and free and loving. And that'll be about it for me. Thank you.
Playing dishonest drunkards.